Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, June 4th. This is the 22nd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, we're going to be talking dinnerware and the design process for restaurants with an amazing ceramics designer. But first, I'm going to do my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round questions, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to do what you love. Yes, I'm talking about living the dream, making work not seem like work, as you are doing what you are passionate for. Okay, I know, this is not the easiest thing to achieve. But I think it's possible if you believe in yourself and your goals. For instance, one of my current clients recently left his job in finance to open his own restaurant. It's called Union Bar and Kitchen. He's working around the clock, but loving every moment of it, as he's now following his passion. Life's short, too short not to be happy, I say. So go after your dream and do what you love. That's my tip today. Okay, I'm really excited, my guest. It's ceramics designer Jono, I said it wrong right off the bat, Jono, I'm so sorry, Jono Pandolfi, who is well recognized in the design and culinary communities for his high-profile dinnerware collaborations with notable chefs. His restaurant clients include 11 Madison Park, The Nomad, WD50, and Atera. Jono is also a faculty member in the product design department at Parsons, the New School for Design. So welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I can't believe I did that. No live radio. No worries. The best. So, we're meeting for the first time here, and I'm very excited to hear more about how you got into ceramics and doing dinnerware for amazing restaurants.
Definitely. Ceramics it's always kind of been my passion and my focus ever since high school. And been tying it into the whole hospitality side of things. That didn't come until much later. That started up about 10 years ago when I was actually living in this same neighborhood. But back when the MoMA was renovated, that's kind of when it kicked off. My first collaboration with Will Godara.
Yes, I read you guys were in a band together.
We were in a band together, and that always gets mentioned. But that was just the start of our collaborative relationship, and we've actually taken it a lot further since we've started doing some dinnerware and projects for 11 Madison Park and the Nomad. And his interest in his and chef as well, Daniel Hum. Those guys have always been, they put a lot of faith in me from the beginning, and that's actually enabled me to really grow and to get to where I am now.
Right. So before the MoMA, what were you doing? That was your first in with restaurants?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, before that, after college, I spent about 4 years teaching pottery in a boarding school upstate in Millbrook, New York. So that was a great 4 years right after college to kind of let me settle down in the real world and get focused and stay busy. But then I moved here to Brooklyn and Bushwick, just down the street from where we are right now, and was just trying to stay busy teaching, working in a ceramics nonprofit in the East Village, teaching, staying busy however I could, making a lot of jewelry, actually. So that was my first kind of selling my own work once I moved to New York, was selling my earrings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I didn't really have a kiln or a wheel or anything at the time, but I had enough money to afford, what I needed to make silver earrings. So that kind of got the ball rolling. And then eventually Will came along and said, all right, I'm working at the MoMA. We want to do some, some something. And actually, I proposed bud vases. So that's kind of where it got going.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but before that, mainly teaching and just trying to stay busy however I could. But eventually, I just kind of found this niche of restaurants. Almost any restaurant I spoke with, if I said to them, we could, can we collaborate? Can we do some dinnerware or do some special pieces for your restaurant? In the beginning, I never pitched dinnerware. It was only little things. It took me years to really figure out how to make plates, dinner plates. That's the hardest thing to make, is a 11-inch full-size plate.
Really? I would think a vase would be more challenging than a plate or a cup, or because it's kind of flat.
Plate, yeah, it seems and like it round. Would be easy. There's a lot that can go wrong with it. That's the problem. If it's big, so there's a lot of surface area. For me, it's all about getting that glaze to melt perfectly on top.
And being symmetric.
Symmetric, everything, warpage,
right.
The bigger the piece gets, the more the potential problems are. So that, like I said, I mean, it really took me a long time to figure out how to make these full size dinner plates. And that's what enabled me to start graduate beyond just little accent pieces, but to do, maybe a whole restaurant,
So when you first started with the MoMA, were you doing everything yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, was doing everything myself. I mean, back then for me, a big order was 4 dozen pieces.
Right.
Yeah. Now we're doing 4,000 at a time.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. So how big is your company now? How many people do you have working with you?
I've got, on any given day, there's 3 to 4 of us working together. It's definitely it's almost like a kitchen. It's a total teamwork thing. Because to make dinnerware from start to finish, you've got to get the clay, you've got to prepare the clay, roll it out, cut it out, you've got to either throw it on the wheel, jigger it, process it, cast it, you've got to dry the pieces, finish them, load them into the kiln, glaze them, fire them again. So you're never doing one thing all day. It's a lot of 20, 30 minute jobs. You're doing one thing, switch. It's all teamwork, kind of working together, keeping everything moving. And so it's fun for me that now that I've grown to a point where there's several of us doing it, it's almost like the same effect, the excitement that I get from ceramics, from making a piece. It's that, but amplified. So it's fun.
It sounds fun. Does the weather factor in too with all that?
The weather does factor in. The drier it is in the wintertime, our ware dries a lot faster. The summer, we have 5 kilns, so sometimes they're all on at the same time. Either on, or they're either heating up or cooling down, and that heats up the space quite a bit. So a lot of tank tops and shorts in my studio, a lot of fans blowing around. We don't have air conditioning.
Ooh.
No. But we get a good cross breeze, so we get by.
Yeah, I bet you do. But that sounds sounds tough. So when you're working with Will and the MoMA, so what was the process like after? You did the vases. Did you do more for them, and then
did a few things for them? I mean, that was really the infancy of what I'm really doing now, and what we've gotten to a point where, we're doing whole entire restaurants. What we did for the moment was a couple bud vases, a couple little small signature, little accent pieces. And it always kind of starts the same way. Sit down with your client, whether it's just a manager, a chef, both, everybody. And a lot of times people have things they've been thinking about wanting to try, or they've got pictures printed out. You sit down, you say, all right, what do you guys need? What do you want? And then we look at ways to accomplish that.
That sounds, I was reading in another part, I think it was a story that you had on your website about how clay tells a story. So it seems like that's part of the process of working with a restaurant and seeing what the story is and and then letting Clay tell it.
Absolutely. It's I'm glad you actually brought that up. I mean, everyone always asks, everyone wants to know, what's your inspiration? Where do the ideas come from for the pieces? And yes, it's a collaborative thing, and you're trying to address the needs of your client. But as in terms of the aesthetic of my work, it's really about the clay, and it's about the medium and the process. There's no decoration, you know, it's about the materials. It's like, I like to let the materials kind of do the talking. I like to just simplify the process, practice it, and just kind of, you know, it's really about thinking about, the same way a chef would like to let the best ingredients they have, just shine. So the aesthetic is really determined by the process, whether it's just subtle spiral on the wheel, the unglazed stoneware, the different tones of stoneware that I work with, letting some of the ware be unglazed, not always glazing everything, so having a lot of matte and tactile finishes, and kind of you know, playing into the whole culinary dining experience by bringing in some tactile elements, and you know, nothing goopy in terms of design, but just, you know, a subtlety, a little bit different from what a lot of restaurants have been working with for what seems like a long time, just that stark white, shiny porcelain, which has a place, but it's, I think people are getting tired of it.
Yeah, I agree, and I like that you said goopy. And I was wondering, so with these restaurants, I know a few that you're working with, Atera, WD50, 11 Madison Park, are your designs exclusive for them, or, because, you know, like, no one else can have that certain signature dish?
Yeah, that's, it depends. There are certain designs in my catalog that I won't offer to other clients. And 11 Madison Park is a perfect example of that. You know, I would never sell that same pattern, the same clay body, glaze, and the look to another restaurant, even though there are other restaurants that probably would like to get their hands on it. What I've been working on, and what I've one thing that's enabled me to grow is finding ways to work with, to develop tooling to create the ware for these restaurants, and then to find new ways to use the same existing tooling but to vary the design somewhat. So while I have an 11-inch coupe plate that I sell to 11 Madison Park, I designed it originally for them. I could always make that same plate in a different color of clay. I could put more of a spiral or a pattern on top, but I still use my existing tooling. So, yes, I will often do a project and I'll reserve that design for that client, you know, in perpetuity. But there's always ways of sort of varying things a little bit to be able to serve, you know, a wider audience and not just, you know, be a guy who just works for a couple handful of restaurants, but to be able to be, you know, versatile and you know, and help a lot of different restaurateurs, not just a select few.
Oh, that sounds awesome to me. I want to talk more about 11 Madison Park, but we're going to take a break here. So stay with us. We'll come back. So this is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Janu Pandolfi. We're talking about dinnerware for restaurants. We're talking about fancy dinnerware, I would like to say. So I wanted to get back to 11 Madison Park because I went there last year with my friend Megan, and we just went on a Tuesday for the hell of it, because we're the type of people who just want to experience all they have to offer. And it was phenomenal. And the plates, the dinnerware, the whole, it played such a big part in the experience. Even, I mean, I tell people the story all the time about the magic trick with the dessert at the end, and there's a secret compartment. So tell me about the design and working with Daniel Hum and how that came about, because it's such creative dinnerware.
Thank you. That whole collection, and I call it the EMP collection, it's a pretty deep collection. It's probably about, honestly, 30 pieces total in the set when you count up every plate and every shape that I do for them, for that restaurant, every teapot, every last little thing. There's probably over 30 different things. And that was a situation where we did the Nomads dinnerware first, and that was around 6,000 pieces. We did.
Really?
Yeah.
Because EMP came exactly before the Nomads.
EMP, they already had dinnerware, so they were clicking along great. And then along came Nomad. That was my first big, job. So we did that, and that was a lot simpler than what we did for EMP. It was only actually six or eight pieces in the Nomad set. And then as soon as I finished that, I mean, that project was behind schedule and my first big job, so learning a ton as we went on that. Got that done. As soon as that was done, the guys said, all right, let's have another meeting. We want to redo the EMP dinnerware. I said, hey, fantastic. We actually didn't. The deadline was coming up so quick on that one, I didn't have time to outsource it. My first Nomad job I did with a plant in Ohio. So it was so big quantity that I was, at the time, was incapable of doing anything like that. Now we could. But we didn't have time to do the EMP dinnerware out in Ohio, so I had no choice but to kind of do some serious problem-solving, working, busting my butt to figure out a process, new processes. I really had to innovate and figure out ways to, and really, again, what it came down to is that 11-inch dinner plate. The bigger the plate, the harder it is, and to form it, to make it, fire it, to get it to be flat, to get it to be perfect enough for a place like that. So a lot of challenge there, just even saying yes to the job. But then the design of it, yeah, absolutely, so much concept to it, so many different courses.
So many different courses, and every plate was different.
Every plate's different.
Yeah.
And every plate has to be versatile too. It's easy to sit down with someone and design a plate around a dish, but you don't want it to be things to be just pigeonholed and have one use. So, that's become a bigger focus of mine as I've grown and as I've worked with more and more clients I always think of, my design, I'm thinking of, okay, is this thing going to be multi-purpose? Are they really going to get, you know, mileage out of it in the restaurant? You know, maybe it's great for the spring dish someone has in mind, but will it be great again in the fall? So versatility, that's something I think of, and that's kind of, the chef might have a lot of crazy ideas, and I'm kind of reining them back, and I'm trying to get them out to my studio to say, hey, let's look at the process together so you understand what some of the limitations are. That's always been important, to sort of enlighten my clients to say, look, you know, we're not just circling a dinner plate in the catalog and then calling up China and saying, send us 500. We're actually making it. So, there's limitations to what we can do. And then gradually, as the years have gone by, we've whittled away at those limitations and gotten better at it. You know, the design of it, that's really the fun part. And actually, it's great to think of, I like being thought of as a ceramics designer, but I wish I designed more. I design a little bit and then I make a lot. And what makes me different, I think, is the ability for us to really form in our production capacity. So I've been focused on not only working with fantastic clients, but also just keeping my production flowing and increasing my production capacity year after year, just so that I can, you know, continue to take on more clients and have the excitement of you know, working with a new place, a WD-50 or an Atera, that when it comes along and be able to say, yeah, we got time, let's do this, let's meet.
Yeah, well, all those restaurants are so amazing, and I've dined at all of them. At Atera, I'm thinking I was there maybe a year and a half ago, and again, it was the presentation and the whole experience that made it.
Totally.
Beyond just the food and the service, but it was everything. And I'm excited to see what you work on next.
Yeah, I'm excited too. We've got a new fantastic project coming up that I'm not sure if I can even say anything about it yet, but a new notable fine dining restaurant that'll be opening. It's actually a few months from now, but we're doing all the dinnerware for that.
When I read about it in a few months, I will talk about it in restaurant industry news.
Great.
And I want to see, so is your dinnerware line available to folks like me? Do you sell retail?
Absolutely. I sell on my own website, johnopandolfi.com.
Okay.
So you can go on there and you can buy Nomad dinnerware. You can get one coffee cup. You can get cups and saucers. You can get full service 7-piece place settings for, you know, 10, 12, 20 people, whatever you need. I got it. And then, so we've got two collections on our website. We've got our rimmed line and we've got our Nomad coupe line.
Okay.
And then, you can also at Crate and Barrel, you can get, I have a 6-piece dinnerware line there called
Nice.
Studio. Yeah. And actually I'm super excited. So what they sell at Crate, that's actually made overseas. So it's much more affordable. It's still a similar product. It's a stoneware. They've got kind of the signature kind of dark stoneware look that I work on. I'm really excited because just in a few weeks, a lot of additional pieces will be arriving in stores to go with my dinnerware line. So it was 6 plates and bowls, and now it's going to be, we've got cups, saucers, all kinds of funky serving pieces, chips and dips, soup pot with a ladle, all designed in my studio. And it all goes with the dinnerware. So you can either get it on my website or you can go to Crate and you can see what they
okay.
have. And a lot of people love that. A lot of restaurants are actually using that.
Good to know. I will check it out.
Totally.
Okay. Now I wanted to ask you, I had my guest last week ask you a question. So I had on Jansen Chan, he's the director of pastry operations at the International Culinary Center. And first you said your plates are amazing, which they are.
Thank you.
And he also noted that you're both professionals who use turntables, and we thought, and a DJ too. So you guys all have that in common.
Definitely.
Now, the question is, he says pastry chefs love their tools. So he wanted to know what your favorite or most essential tool is.
Potters love their tools also. and I've got all the toys, but... the turntable, gosh, the wheel. I mean, that's his favorite tool. Because that's probably mine. But
he didn't.
Without that,
I
can't
do
anything.
I don't know if he said that. He just said that he loves his tools.
Right. My favorite tool is probably, I guess, my favorite thing in my studio is the kiln, because that's what. The kiln. Without the kiln, we can't do what we
can
do.
Makes it happen.
Exactly. I mean, we make stoneware, so it's fired up to around 2200 Fahrenheit. The firing takes around 24 hours total. It takes about 12 hours to fire up, and then about 12 more hours to cool. And what you put into the kiln is very different from what you take out. And what I think I love about ceramics, and what drew me in from day one, is the ability to take something, obviously clay, you shape it, you design it, do what you want. But when you put it into the kiln and you fire it, and it transforms it in a really intense way. You know, you make something that will probably never leave this earth unless someone really does their best to get rid of it. So just the fact that the kiln really transforms the ware into something that's so permanent, and what's important to me in the hospitality industry is, and durability is so important. And so, just the firing process and then really mm-hmm. perfecting that, tweaking that, calibrating it, and constantly always being in touch with it is so important to what we do and so important to create a durable product. And that's unless you have a durable product, you really can't work with people in the hospitality industry. So
well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might be one of the few people who grew up in a household that had a kiln in our backyard because my mom's an artist, used to dabble
that's
in
so
ceramics.
Cool. Yeah.
And we were from Miami, so talk about hot and hot. But I knew not to get close to it because it's like super.
I'm sure it was outdoor.
It was outdoor. It was in our backyard.
Cool.
And yeah, so I'm a little familiar with kilns. And also, you don't know if something's going to break inside or.
Well, that's,
you know.
That's actually a. That's kind of a ceramic myth.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, you should know if something's going to... When I've put in a load of plates, I'm pretty sure they're all going to come out pretty nice the next day. Nothing blows up for me ever anymore.
Well, that's good. It's a good track
record. I hope
record.
Not at this, at, after doing it for 10 years. But yeah, there are some myths that go along with ceramics. Like, oh, you never know what the color of the glazes are going to come out. Like, well, yeah, I mean, it's... There's a big difference between what people do in schools and your average pottery studios and then in more of an industrial pottery. And everything we do is geared toward getting consistency, a quality, consistent, durable product. So a lot of the any kind of guesswork and any kind of any haphazard side to it, we've tried to eliminate that as much as we can, but we still make everything by hand. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's completely handmade product, and it's completely handmade process, but we've tried to kind of cross the bridge between, you know, what a handmade pottery does and what an industrial pottery mm-hmm. does. We maintain the look, feel, and quality of the handmade pottery, and it's still done by hand, but we've just innovated in a few ways that enabled us to do 500, 600 place settings if someone needs it.
Yeah, well, you figured that out because your work definitely all looks handmade.
It is handmade.
Well, that's why it looks
yeah.
it.
we want it to look handmade. We don't want to take that part out of it. But we do like being able to do a consistent product. I mean, just even getting dinner plates to stack, you know, just to have them so they can stack 12, 15 high, that's important to a restaurant. But that's really hard to do when you're making stuff completely by hand. So
right.
that's part of it.
Challenges.
Part of the challenge of design. I mean, when you design for a restaurant, you're designing not just with thinking of how is the food going to look on the plates. You're thinking, how are the plates going to store? You know, how are they going to fit in the dishwasher? How are they going to, the durability of it? So there's so many other factors other than does food look good on it that you're thinking about. Because obviously there's a lot of beautiful plates out there that food would look fantastic on, but
they're not functional.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And so we've had to kind of, you know, find a balance of maintaining, you know, the certain aesthetic qualities, but creating some aspects that allow us to you know, allow our product to last and to hold up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Learned a lot from you.
Cool.
Very cool, and it sounds so fun. I want to go make something.
Yeah, you should definitely come see our studio.
Oh, cool! I'd love to. You're in Union.
We're in Union City.
Okay.
We're basically we overlook Hoboken, and so we overlook Hoboken and the water and Manhattan. So we've got a nice spot looking over to the city. We're in a big funky old industrial building. We're actually in the old Yardley soap factory.
Alrighty.
Yeah, it still says it up there on the top, Yardley. It's neat.
I see a field trip in my future.
Definitely.
Okay, we're going to take another break here. We're going to come back and do my speed round game and industry news discussion. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh,
Okay, we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Janu Pandolfi. And it's now time for my speed round questions. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
So what it is, I'm going to name two things, such as chocolate or vanilla, and you just pick your preference.
Okay.
If you want to answer that one, you can.
Chocolate.
Okay, cool. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
I'd say eat in.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Beer. But I like them all three. All three are fine.
That's
sorry.
Good.
It's that's good probably to know. Not allowed.
No, it is allowed. Right. And it's you know, these are just what you're feeling right now.
I start
now.
Off with a beer.
All right. We'll go with the beer. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
I don't know. It depends on my mood, I guess, but small plates.
I this is when I've been asking everyone, but I'm thinking that has a whole new connotation for you.
Right.
You know?
I like making small plates better.
Well, how big is this small plate? Yeah. So, okay.
I just made 397-inch plates for Nomad. So they're rolling out some new menu items based on that.
I'll have to go in again.
So we'll go
soon.
With small plates.
All right, we'll go with small plates. How about tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I'd say tipping.
Okay. Communal table or chef's counter?
Definitely. I like chef's counter wherever I can.
Me too. Glazed or unglazed?
I guess, I don't know. That's a hard one for me. Glazed.
I don't know. You're the only one I'm asking that to. That's not a standard.
I like to glaze pottery wherever the food touches it.
Okay.
I like to leave unglazed areas. The stoneware it's food safe even if there's glaze or not. Some of my unglazed areas are still food safe, but we'll go with glazed.
Good to know. I was thinking people might think I'm talking about donuts, but
I wasn't. if you're talking donuts, definitely glazed.
Yeah, glazed. Okay. How about Will Guidara, the bandmate, or restaurant operator?
Restaurant operator. He's a very good drummer, but
all right.
He's doing what he's made to do now.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Union City?
I'll go with Union City.
Woo!
Yeah.
Good for Union City.
Definitely.
Oh, that's the game.
I love it.
Cool. Thanks. All right. So let's talk some industry news. So one hot topic this week was about restaurant reservations and reservation systems.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there was this article in the Wall Street Journal that Jay Cheshes wrote called Ticket to Dine, the Restaurant Reservation Revolution. And basically it's, you know, there's been for a few years these reservation systems online that are kind of are scalping tickets to restaurants in a sense. Ben Leventhal and Gary Vaynerchuk have come up with something, an app launching soon called Resy, where basically at a hot restaurant at 8 o'clock, if there's no reservations, they may have one available at 8 and you can buy it for $25 and the money will go to the restaurant. So I don't know. And then they also talked about Nick Kokonis from Alinea and Next and how he has his own reservation system online that's with ticketing that's been very successful, and he's going to start selling his software for that. So how do you feel about all this?
I read the article. I didn't realize it was by Jay. That was cool.
Yeah, Jay's cool.
I guess it makes sense. You know, I think about a lot of the challenges of a restaurant operator, but I don't think about things like people not showing up. But I guess, and that was one of the main points in the article. Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're EMP and you're booked out solid for the night, but then a couple of tables don't show up, I'm sure that never happens at EMP, but it might happen other places.
But I think EMP is one that you have to put a deposit or give your credit card.
Oh, you do?
I'm pretty sure, and then it's like a 24-hour cancellation
Got
policy.
It.
I think those restaurants have less no-shows because there's a penalty, but I've heard there's people no-show a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you're gonna have to fork over the money in the end anyway. So, I mean, I guess some people might think it's a little crass, I guess. Ask for the money up front. But
yeah,
if people are doing it, if they're doing it at Next, is that what the...
Well, Nick, who's Next in Alinea and all Chicago restaurants, it's... I've never dined there, but I have gone to their website to see how it works. And he has different time slots and party of two, party of four or six, and there's and different price. So maybe a Tuesday at 6:30, it costs $230 right. to dine there, and a Friday night, it's $100 more. And then you buy it, and then it's like buying a ticket to a show. And I think the only way to get out of it is to sell your ticket, but right. you're committed. I don't know. I think it's interesting to see what will happen. I think some people, with the whole thing with Resy that's launching, I think the challenge is that people are used to you can make a reservation for free, and now someone's saying, well, it's going to cost you money to make that same reservation.
Yeah, they may not. It may, I mean, it may, I don't know if it'll hurt business, but yeah, you get someone to thinking twice about it before they even make the reservation.
Right.
But I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
If it's helpful for fine dining restaurants, great, go for it. I don't see it catching on for casual, smaller, in you know, more informal dining. I just don't see right. how it would even work, because who's going to go? I mean, to for it's like a prefixed price usually, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, would that work for Roberta's? For example,
probably not, and that's why the smaller places and more casual are typically more walk-in type restaurants too. Okay, well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see if it catches on. We'll come back
in
a year and see if it's all the rage.
Sounds good. Okay, now another thing in the New York Times today, Florence Fabricant, she had a lot of interesting news, and one of them was that Dan Kluger is leaving ABC Kitchen and ABC Cucina. He has been the executive chef since they opened. And the article got picked up by Grub Street and Eater and everyone else. So I've always been a fan of Dan, and I'm excited to see what his next move is.
Definitely. I've always been a fan of Dan as well. I go way back with Dan because it was actually... probably my second custom tabletop design client ever, because we had just done a couple teeny things for the MoMA, and then the Core Club opened up.
Okay.
And I did a couple really kind of special butter dishes for the Core Club that were two-sided, and they opened up, and Fleur de Sel was in one side and butter was in the other. It was kind of a neat thing, and that was with Dan.
Oh,
that was with Dan
neat.
Back in the day. You know, he's moved around. He's done a lot of amazing things for Jean-Georges. And it's awesome that, and actually we've definitely tried to collaborate over the years, but it just, nothing has really clicked and worked out. But he's always been a massive fan. And so, you know, when I heard the news, I sent him an email. I said, hey, let's talk soon. And, he responded enthusiastically. So hopefully that could be another, maybe a 2015 project. I don't know. We'll see. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'd love to see that happen.
I'm very happy for him, and you know, I think the city is going to be really receptive to whatever he does.
Me too. I mean, he said he's looking to open his own place, but didn't say specifically what. So
right.
We'll have to stay tuned on that too.
We'll stay tuned.
So that's cool. And then the last thing I just wanted to bring up was it's Negroni Week, and I was just impressed by this because Negroni has become this very popular cocktail, and the fact that they're doing this whole Negroni Week, where they had a launch party the other night, and it's a worldwide campaign. It's sponsored by Imbibe Magazine and Campari, and the restaurants and bars around the world participating, and they're giving, how it works is they're giving a portion of their sales to a charity or a nonprofit. And I saw Joe Campanelli, who has a show on Heritage Radio Network called In the Drink. He's donating all of their proceeds to Heritage Radio Network. So
nice.
I thought that was very cool. So thank you, Joe. And I thought your wife and my friend Erica Ducey would probably be very excited about this whole...
Absolutely. You beat me to the punch. No, I've had a lot of exposure to cocktails the last... year, a couple years. Erica Ducey, my wife's got a book out on the topic. It's called Storied Sips.
It's awesome.
It's totally awesome. It's the history of the world's 40 most iconic cocktails. And it's beautifully illustrated, and it's amazingly researched and written. And it's been fun being there through the process, the research process. I've learned a lot, and I've learned a lot about tasting, and I've learned a lot about actually the history of the cocktails, which is super interesting. And a lot of funny stories behind them. And I can't remember the Negroni story off the top of my head, but
me either.
Yeah, it's cool. There's a lot of lore behind cocktails, and there's some disputed origins and things like that. And I think Erica had some fun kind of trying to get to the bottom of it, and the end result is pretty popular. People really dig it.
Yeah, they do dig it.
We dig
it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, happy Negroni week. Okay, we're going to take one more break here, and we're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Okay, so this week I went down to Chelsea and I checked out a new place called Barchetta, which is on West 23rd and 10th Avenue. It's in the space that was formerly Alain Allegretti's La Promenade des Anglais. And then this new place, Barchetta, is an LDV hospitality restaurant, which is owned by John Meadow, and the chef is Dave Pasternak, who is from Esca, and he's still with Esca. He's now just working on both the restaurants. And Dave is known for his crudo, and his Italian-style raw fish. And so that's what I was on a mission to get, and that is what I had. I went early. It was a Sunday, sat at the bar, and they had a crudo tasting, which was 6 for $28. They serve 3 at a time. So this is what I got. I got black sea bass with cracklings, red snapper with Meyer lemon pressed olive oil, red king salmon with sorrel, wahoo with crushed pistachio, long fin tuna with Sicilian olive oil, and Boston mackerel with gaita olive aioli. And I would say out of them, the wahoo was my favorite, which is kind of weird that this week when I was in Bermuda, I had wahoo too. So I'm on a wahoo roll, apparently.
Wahoo.
Exactly. Wahoo. So I also then got the antipasta charred octopus because the bartender there was like, you're going to need more food because, I mean, the serving side was very reasonable, but it's still, you're eating raw pieces of fish. It was kind of, it's a light, light meal.
I actually ate there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved the crudo. Like,
oh,
every
cool.
single one you listed, like, my mouth is watering again because that, I'm a big fan of Pasternak's cuisine.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm so glad you went, and I am too. And he came in when I was there, and he showed me around the space, and he's such a nice guy.
Definitely.
And I think anyone who's a seafood lover who likes fish, raw fish, go there. This is the place to get crudo.
It was so good.
Oh, awesome. So anyone who wants to check it out, their website's barchettanyc.com. Okay, so we're getting to the end of the show, so we're going to do the final question. And I'm having on a consulting pastry chef next week because I need to get more pastry talk out there. And it's Pichet Ong. I don't know if you've met him before, but he's a consulting pastry chef, and I think he consults on savory a bit too. So I wanted to see if you can ask him a question.
I would have a question for a consulting pastry chef. Yeah, I've I've talked and met with many pastry chefs. I guess my question to him would be, if you could design or have one, you know, one versatile ideal plate for all your pastry, you know, what would it be?
Okay.
You know, I mean, does that work? Because that would be,
it works for
that
me.
That would be helpful for me to know.
I think it's a great question. Yeah. I will ask him. I'm sure he'd love to talk plate design
with
you.
I'd love to hear his answer to that. And a lot of times when we design a, you know, place setting or a setting or a, you know, pattern for a restaurant, that kind of gets overlooked, the pastry plate. It always ends up being the salad plate that they use for that, which is like, you know, around 8 or 9 inch. The dinner plate being more like 10.5 to 11. So it always ends up being the salad plate, and I think of it as a salad plate that they use for the pastry plate. And so that, you know, that works for a lot of people, but I definitely would love to hear his answer
about
that.
Okay, yeah. I will find out. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much for coming out here today.
You're welcome. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been fun. I'm really glad I got to meet you and learn more about what you do. It's fascinating.
Definitely. Thanks for asking.
Oh, you're welcome. So I've been talking with Jono Pandolfi. His website is jonopandolfi.com. He's on Twitter at Jono Pandolfi. Should I spell that? JonoPandolfi. Now, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at All Industry, at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at Heritage_Radio. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com. If you miss this live broadcast, you can always find us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org and on Stitcher and iTunes. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, who makes this work every week, doing his magic behind the scenes. And thanks to everyone out there listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 for another live one. Hope you'll tune in then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.